Department annual report.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Council. I'd like to invite my board president to join me here at the table. We've got a couple of board members with us. Carol Bertiotti, who's the Media Pass president, Levi Lundak, who's our current vice president, and Shel Mahana, who's our current sitting president. I don't see other members of the board here right now. Michelle wants to say a few words to you, and then I'll give you a high-level overview, and I also have a handout for you. So, Michelle, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Council. Thank you for your time this afternoon. As Stephen mentioned, I'm Shelley Mahana, and I was appointed to the Riverside Concerts Advisory Board in April 2015, and I am currently serving as president. It's my honor to further the department's mission to help Rochester make Rochester a more livable community and to contribute to the quality of life for our citizens. As you can see, Steve has streaming behind us the current and the future lineup for Thursdays, first and third, as well as for Down by the Riverside, which is going to kick off on July 9th down at Mayo Park with Spin Doctors, which is a blast from my high school past, which will be exciting. But also, as part of these concerts, is one of is a series of concerts that have become kind of my favorite as a board member, and it's the World Music Series. And one of the reasons why I really like these concerts is they're featured during Thursdays and first and third, but we also have lunchtime concerts on Wednesdays at the Rochester Public Library. And what I've enjoyed about being in the audience of these concerts, we see families with young children, as well as downtown workers who come in over their lunch break and get their musical fix and then move on. So the story that I like to share, it's one that I've told to my board members. It's one that I talk to when I'm telling community members about kind of what we do. And it's also a story that I shared with the Minnesota State Arts Board as part of a grant application process that Mr. Schmidt and Chris Alcott worked on earlier this year. Last year, the Carr Collective were in town, and that was they're an African band. And what was really neat about this concert was we had a really neat little turnout for it. And towards the back of the auditorium, there was this woman with her family, and just standing there and kind of watching. Prior to the end of the concert, one of the last songs, she came up and danced with one of the singers in the band. And for me, as a board member and as a community member, it was just one of those transcendent moments where you see what music can do for people. It's for me, these are the type of events that celebrate the diversity of people and ages in our community, and it's representative of the programming that that we contribute to our community's quality of life, and it's great to be part of that. So again, I don't want to take up much of your time today. Stephen has the nuts and bolts of what is being presented, and we hope to see you at future events. And thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam President. Now I'll provide for you a high-level overview of some of the information that you've already received. I circulated the annual report, the detailed annual report, prior to our originally scheduled time. And so this is a recap and a high-level view of that. And I also have a handout which provides some additional detail here. And if I can get the technology to work. I beg your indulgence while this is coming up. What we can do is send these around. There we go. Notice how the curtain is open. I'd like to begin by saying that the music department is fiscally sound. The music department has ended the last 25 fiscal years in the black. In fact, we've ended 28 of the last 29 years in the black. The music department planned for the presentation hall being closed from construction at the Civic Center, and so we reduced our revenue projections and our expenditures for fiscal 2016 accordingly. We ended last fiscal year with an operating surplus of about $11,000, and then about $141,000 when we take a look at encumbrances and carryovers. Again, we continue to produce that surplus because we're very conservative in terms of how we manage our cash flow, and frankly, because this council and the administration has allowed the music department to be entrepreneurial, and it's been allowed to actively manage its cash flow in an appropriate way. This surplus enabled the music department to forward fund a similar amount of fiscal 2017 expenditures. Here's a budget at a glance, and so if we would just look at this column right here, you can see that we fell a little bit short of our ticket sales goal. That's attributable to the closing at the Mayo Civic Center. So we obtained about 92% of our earned revenue goal, but as you can see here on the expenditure side, we only spent about 80% of our contractual services. So we planned for the shortfall in revenue and didn't spend as much bringing art to the folks as we might have been able to. Turning our attention to fiscal 2017, being halfway through the fiscal year, you can see that we're right on target here. We've actually exceeded our goal for government grants, which is helpful to us. And we're right on target in terms of where we need to be. Again, we have half of our Riverside Live concert series left to go, so it would be expected that we would still need to generate about 50% of our revenue. And on the expenditure side, you can see here as well that we've spent about 50% of the resources that we had planned to spend. Turning our attention to the economic impact of the department. The economic impact of the music department last fiscal year is estimated to be $8 million. These figures come from the Americans for the Arts. The music department generated $120,000 in revenue for the Mayo Civic Center. Lion's share of that came from expenses that we paid for the Civic Center for programming that we did over across the street. But about $3,000 is attributable to the ticket surcharge that they put on tickets, the facility fee. We generated about $46,000 in concession revenues for the Mayo Civic Center. So in terms of significant outcomes from last fiscal year, the music department staff of just four and a volunteer corps of 13 board members supported 100 distinct services last year, serving over 360,000 people. We celebrated the 25th anniversary of Down by the Riverside. I can't believe we've gone 25 years, and last summer seems like forever ago to me right now. The department arranged 52 musical performances for Thursdays on 1st and 3rd. It continued to program at the Mayo Civic Center, our Riverside Live concert series. And it completed its portfolio by doing world music education and community outreach, community music, and services to the field. Last fiscal year, I also started investing a great deal of my time and effort in support of efforts to repurpose the Chateau Theater. If we look at significant outcomes for fiscal 2017 to date, as you saw in the previous slide, we are on target to meet our financial and fiscal and attendance goals. I continue to provide support for the Chateau Theater Task Force. We booked and will soon begin our Down by the Riverside concert series, and if anybody'd like to take a postcard advertising them, we have them here. We presented about half of our Riverside Live programs. Our world music concerts series and residencies will begin in July. We've supported so far 15 education community outreach services and have plans to support 6 more this year. Tomorrow night we'll be doing our Rochester Fest concert, so please no rain, and our 4th of July concert. And this year we've arranged for 56 distinct Thursdays on 1st and 3rd musical performances. We do face some challenges that I'd like to call to council's attention. Staff capacity is one of the largest ones. It would really be difficult to add another program to our portfolio. and to continue to provide such a high level of support for the Chateau without additional resources. If council, and this is a big if, I understand that, but if you all should determine that the music department should provide additional support for the Chateau, it will be necessary to add some staff. And when we get to that point, I can offer those revisions to the staffing table for your consideration. Chuck Blattner recently retired as the department's artistic director. We'll soon be conducting a search for a replacement for Chuck. Just a couple of others, please. The music department would benefit from having a performance facility of its own. That's something that the Chateau could present us with. While we have a commitment to continuing the program at the Civic Center, and we are successful with our programs at the Civic Center, having a facility like the Chateau and having the music department be positioned to be the ones responsible for managing and programming that community asset would really open up our reach to be able to serve more citizens and visitors. And when the time comes to acquire a patio cover for the Mayo Civic Center patio, it's really important that that be designed in such a way so that it also can serve as a stage cover for our Down by the Riverside concerts. It needs to be properly designed so it can support the weight of flying sound and lighting equipment. It might be helpful to have the electric built into it in such a way so that weatherproof theatrical equipment can stay outside rather than having to pay the cost of loading it in and out each week. With that, I'd like to entertain any questions or comments council might have.
Questions? Mr. Ruska? Anyone else? Excellent report, particularly the financial status. That's good. The variety of programming is impressive. I think we tend to forget, you know, what goes into creating all the performances on Thursdays on First and Down by the Riverside and the in-house programs. So it's a phenomenal amount of activity. So thank you for that, Mr.
Thank you, sir.
Just wanted to comment. I mean, the last couple of years, you've really taken a pretty active role in the Chateau Theater discussions, and also, you know, picking up Thursdays on First was a big load as well, and done it with zero extra staff, and everyone's happy with the results, so I wanted to particularly thank you for that. And I know that the your department is somewhat unique in the city of Rochester, and it's one of those things that I think makes us better than other cities, so really appreciate what you do.
Thank you, Councilman.
All right, anyone else?
I've said it all before, so I won't waste your time saying it again, but thank you for all the hard work, and that's probably sufficient.
Thank you, Councilman.
All right.
Very good.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I'll collect the handouts, and I think members of the media probably want copies. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Council. Thank you for all you do to support our work.
All right, next up, we have Mr. Martinson and staff, and OpenGov update.
So I'm just going to do a brief introduction again. I got a couple of brief introductions. But you probably recall, it's been quite a while ago now, you had us look at this transparency in government and this idea of using OpenGov. And we set about entering a bunch of transactions into the system. And I would say it's been kind of a longer effort than we anticipated, because we've done a couple iterations back with the department heads. Our intent was to get this all the way down to the transactional level, so that if people want to keep digging and drilling down, they can get right down to the transactions. We discovered in all that there's different things we had to do to protect private data to make sure we didn't expose the things that weren't actually public data pieces. So Jason has put a lot of work into this, and I will say we still have some frustrations a little bit with the speed at which this thing reacts. This is a fully hosted system. We're paying $15 or something like that a year for this system. So I still call this a work in progress and a trial, I guess, in my opinion. And we'll see what you think about it, what the public thinks about it as we go down the road. But we've got well over a million transactions in the system now. And so I'll turn it over to Jason as a demonstration, and we'll have a little discussion about it, and we'll see where it goes from there.
For those of you that don't know me, I am Jason Steen. I'm the internal auditor for the City of Rochester. I've been working on this project for, I'd say, well over a year now, just uploading the information, verifying, tying out everything to our accounting software. Currently, right now, we are only reporting on financial information, but with this OpenGov platform, we do have the capability of reporting on non-financial information, such as police runs. I know other cities have actually gone down to things such as incidents with vehicles hitting deer, if it's a large problem in their city. So you can go anywhere from mapping it out to just simply just putting it into a graphical form like this. Like Dale said, we have had some issues along the way with it, but I did want to say, working with the OpenGov staff, they've been very helpful. I've had multiple calls with their engineering team, and they've actually built improvements just to speed up our process. But it is still a work in process. It is semi-slow. This is the overview of the system itself. It represents everything in a graphical format. Right now, we have through 2011 in this, and I am through 2017, and this is updated through the end of May. I do a manual upload each month after we close the books to get the current month's information in, and I tie it out to make sure everything's accurate. From a processing time, it doesn't take me all that long to do, but just between closing the books and the end of the month, it can take it's usually about 6 to 7 days after month end that we actually get the information uploaded. This is accessible currently to the public. We just went live with it. The website itself, the City of Rochester website, has a few different ways you can get there. On this scroll bar on the bottom, we have added a button for OpenGov, which will take you to our breakdown of all our different reports that we built. I've built a number of different reports in here to try to make it easier for both the staff and the public to get the information they want without having to filter it down. I've done some of that for them. Other ways to access it is if you go into the departments, there's also an OpenGov tab here, or under the I Want To section in the view, there's also an OpenGov section here. We also have made it easier just to type, so if you're going to rochestermn.gov, you can just add on OpenGov, and that will also take you to this page. So you don't have to navigate to the website directly and then follow some links. There are two different setups of the reports. There's an annual comparison, which is this, where it's showing a year-over-year analysis. And then there's also a monthly comparison, where you're selecting a calendar year, and it will show it to you by month. Within that, the monthly report, if you do want to look at a different year, you can scroll all the way to the bottom, and there's this for fiscal year, and you can select and alter that, and it will pull up. It's a little slow since I'm on Wi-Fi, but there we go. So this is our entire 2016 year of revenues and expenses by month. Within the website itself, we're just looking at the annual report. All of our different reports are listed here on the left. As you can see, we have quite a few different reports. I tried to break it down as much as possible. May have a few too many, but I figured I'd rather have too many than not enough. But the general one is a citywide financial statement report. This will contain all information for revenues and expenses across the city. If you'd like to drill down on it, there's a couple different ways you can do it. You can go in here and filter by a specific department, by a particular revenue or expense type that you're looking for, or you can also actually just simply click onto the expenses in the graph, and the graph will update. Like I said, a little slower with the Wi-Fi. So now we have our expenses and our expenditures, and you can drill down to whatever level you want. Within these reports, I've also built, so for example here, I pulled up our golf report earlier. I've also built what they call views. It's essentially a saved drill down of a report. So for example, if we want to just look at like Northern Hills Golf Course in particular, you can go to our golf report, which is going to be here on the left. So you can go to our golf report, which is going to be right here on the left, our Parks and Rec golf annual income statements. And then all the way on the bottom, there's going to be two tabs, filters and views. And on the views tab, this is where I had my saved views. This is basically my interpretation of what I thought would be beneficial to users, being able to drill it down to, in this case, a particular golf course. And then from here, and the part that's kind of taken us a little bit of time is we do go down to a transactional level. So obviously just seeing this number and seeing our expenses are $152,000 for Northern Hills through May, that only helps you so much. And you can drill down into the different accounts, but sometimes you really want to see what we are paying and what the costs are. So you can, as you can see here, we do have it down to a transactional level for each golf course, for each department. And like Dale said, we did go through and try to filter out as much data as possible that would be confidential information, such as employee payroll and workers' comp claims, things like that, of that nature, that you would have to submit a data request for. Some of the benefits of this system, like I said, it goes down to this. Me personally, and this is totally me, I don't do well with graphs. I'm a numbers guy. They've always been better to me than a graphical format. So I would call myself an Excel nerd. So with this...
You're awesome, just for the record.
Thank you. with this in the transaction... I lost my internet.
Where's the IT guy?
Well, with this, I just won't click on the link. There is a transactional report here that just gives you all of the base level information. And from there, you can kick all that out into Excel and play with it however you want to. So if you're like me and prefer to just work within Excel, you can do that. With this program too, it also allows you to share information. So once you get down to a specific area that you want, a graph that you like, you can simply download an image, which is probably not going to work since I don't have the internet right now. And that, or you can share it via Facebook, Google, Twitter, or even just email it to other people in the area. With this on the back end, we do also have the capability of tracking what users are looking at, how many users we have to the page, and that information to see how widely used this is from both an internal and external standpoint. I'll open it up to any questions that people have with this. Unfortunately, like I said, I don't have internet right now, so I can't drill down too much, but I can try to answer any questions anyone has.
So, a comment and a question. I've been out looking at the data since you put it out there, and I agree it'll be interesting when we start to see some of those non-financial metrics. I'd love to be able to do some things like on a per capita basis, something like that. But that I realize that's coming. And then my question is, give me a better handle of how much effort it takes you to maintain this data. How much of it is manual input versus automated data feeds, et cetera?
We chose not to do the automated data feeds simply from the standpoint of we have to limit what kind of information is pulled up in here. Other cities, I know with my login information, I can have access to the public reports of other cities, such as I know I saw one in Texas. They actually will upload their payment information, so they'll get down to, you know, you guys issued me a check for $100 for my payroll this week. Mm-hmm. We don't go down to that level here. So we chose not to do the automatic feed. Instead, what we do is just data dumps out of the system, out of our accounting JGiblet system, and then I format it into an upload file, and I upload it. All in all, I would say it takes me about maybe 3 hours a month to do. So I would say it was pretty minimal on our standpoint of pulling the information out of the system, uploading it, and verifying that information. So.
Okay. Others? Mr. Woodard.
So, in turn, and I haven't been able to play around with it yet, but I know one of the things is, if you look at our total budgets, they're going to jump around a whole lot, as opposed to if you look at the operating budgets, they tend to be more of a, you know, gradual growth rate. Do we have, are we able to set up common requests or something where we can click on, have certain things that people might be interested in looking.
Yep, and that's actually one thing I'm working on is I'm just calling it a frequently asked questions section. I'm putting that more on our on the website itself, so users don't have to drill down to a level. It'll pose a common question that we have, and I've talked with our city clerk's department about if we have recurring questions that just let me know, and I can get the graph to where we want to do it, and I can upload the website, and then it'll be a simple link just as this.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And then I know there's been, you know, a lot of issues with the platform itself in terms of communicating and, you know, getting it to be sufficient speed. ideally a tool like this could help us at budgeting time because it's better than a printed out book that is not very fluid. Are we getting enough of a commitment from OpenGov to improving the performance issues that we have that we're going to be able to move in that direction eventually?
Yes. They do have a budgeting tool through OpenGov, but it was a brand new system. I believe they rolled out this year, so we chose not to.
Right.
Since we've had performance issues with this. But from the issues that we've had with speed particularly, the support I've had has been fantastic, I thought. I've been on calls with multiple... We do have a liaison, Meredith, her last name forgets me, I actually was on the phone with her this morning, and she always answers calls, quick respond on emails, and I've had multiple meetings with their engineering team to speed it up, and they have actually implemented site-wide changes based on our recommendations, because a lot of cities aren't going to the level of detail that we are in the transactional level, so like Dale said, we already have... I checked it this morning. I think we're over 1.4 million lines of data right now from just 2011 through the end of 2016.
So I pretty strongly believe in this, so I hope we get those performance issues worked out. I hope we can get to the point where we can do budgeting in here real time.
And with this, like I said, the system can be kind of slow, but the system itself caches all the information. So the more you use it, the faster it will go. Unfortunately, it's kind of a pain you have to work with it.
Mr. Campion.
So two things. I think 12 months from now, we should get a readout of the Google Analytics data to figure out, or I think you said it's Google Analytics. I might be jumping topic here. But whatever analytics we can about who's using it. And then two is I'd like, in that same timeline, staff to come back with, are we finding this useful? Is it helping drive staff discussion? Because I think we'll also have to have that discussion for council. Because... Three hours a month plus $15,000 a year, it's something we should at least talk about if we're getting the value out of the investment on that timeline. So I think for the next 12 months, we try and see what kind of usage it gets and see, especially as we go through the budget cycle and we come up to the truth and taxation hearing, if this kind of gets to some of the explanation that people are looking for when they come to us with questions. But I appreciate all the work, and I'm sure it took some doing. So thank you for investing all that in the tool, and I'm excited to get out there and tinker and see what I can find.
I agree. The budgeting tool would be phenomenal. I mean, many of us have been used to doing online budgeting for a long time now, and I would love to be able to just have it on the electronic versus printing off the books, especially when we print the draft. It will be a vast improvement.
Is there projection ever seen another budget? So you have the 2017 budget, so I'm assuming you can do projected budgets.
The current setup they have, they do not do projections.
Okay, so the 2017 budget is just raw numbers by those account subjects?
Yeah, raw numbers, and then I upload any changes to the accounts.
I did look at their budget package, and just to me it wasn't ready for prime time yet, but they're clearly still developing it and trying to make it.
It could still be something that department heads use as they're kind of looking historically over not the budget tool, sorry, as a historic tool.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, again, they have the option to go into our enterprise system too, but some of them find it a little bit cumbersome just to even get logged onto it. So if you're not into that system daily, it's not probably as handy, but it's faster than this one. So it's kind of, at least so far, again, I keep hoping they improve it. The one way to speed it up is to get more and more summarized transactions instead of all the actual, but then you lose that detail. Because the third question somebody asks you, what is it that makes this one so much bigger? And then you do have to drill down here, like, well, now you're back into the enterprise system. So we try to bring all the transactions out here, and we hope that they can make that work fast enough. So.
All right, anyone else?
Thank you.
Moving on, Mr. Martinson, you again. Scene update?
Yeah, so we kind of broke this into two different sections. Last time we talked about, as part of our integration work that our steering committee has been working on and the tech team has been working on, we brought in the Office 365 thing last time. That's on the agenda for tonight, and you basically kind of gave us the nod on that last time. And then this is more of the what we call a SIM. Oh, I always forget what it is. Security Information and Event Management tool. And I didn't quite have this all planned out too well. So Tony, our security expert, happened to be at the training this week. But Steve from the library, our IT manager at the library, I've agreed to hop in here and pinch hit for him. He's going to give you a short presentation on it. Again, this is one of those things that we can go into hours of detail if you want. We're assuming you don't want to get too deep into the woods in this, so we're keeping this pretty simple but available for questions afterwards. We should have dragged that out a little bit longer, huh?
And... Well, I preloaded the client on here. Might have to go directly to Shalashi, but I'll try just another.
There's a cord.
if you wait long enough, the free market will solve this.
We also won't buy a new $90,000 TV.
Let's see, mono price, $5.
So power is sluggish, and I was trying to
plug. Your presentation is just too much. Too much.
If music's having problems, solid number.
Oh, button is doing something different.
Solid number. It's my show, lady.
Hey, Paul.
Nice catch.
Paul Whitman.
You're just watching for that.
Somebody reported the tree down on the trail in Kutsky Park. You know? There's a tree down on the trail in Kutsky Park.
I wasn't aware.
You know it now.
Okay. Thanks to you, everybody. I'm going to
see how productive that way was.
A little presentation on IT security. Tony Campbell wasn't able to make it, so I volunteered to help him out here. So, becoming more secure as we work to become more integrated. First question, can you identify which of these companies were breached?
That's what I guess, too.
Yes.
a little surprising, all of them except for John Deere, and that's all that's been, you know, publicly disclosed. kind of surprising.
Yeah, they just haven't been covered.
Looking at its incidents and breaches in 2015, Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report tracks breaches that are reported, and in 2015 there's over 64,000. Total incidents and compromises that were reported in 2015. The public sector is becoming increasingly a target in some of these breaches, and it's a little surprising here. Federal, state, and local government agencies accounted for over 47,000 of these 64,000 incidents. In fact, public sector accounts for more incidents than any other sector combined, including financial, entertainment, and retail. To be exact, about 73% of incidents. And the trend is that we'll probably see the number of breaches and incidents increase. The 2016 data hasn't been released yet. So what can we do? Well, we can develop comprehensive security policies, apply technical, physical, administrative controls to support these policies, and provide security awareness training for our users. Currently, policies are in development, and they are making their way through multiple levels of review, including end users from many departments across the city. This slide gives you kind of a status of where the policies are right now. Several are at end user group review level and will soon be going to department heads for review. So, how can we enhance our security posture? We can incorporate automated monitoring of our systems using real-time correlated information on threats acting within our environments, and important, respond to these threats quickly. So what's the best way to accomplish these goals? As Dale had mentioned earlier, utilizing the SIEM, a security information and event management system, this technology will aggregate information across all of our network devices, switches, firewalls, endpoints, servers, through and correlate that data through advanced analytics. It's not enough to just look at one log. It's really getting the bigger picture, putting all these logs together and building a picture. Including profiles of normal and anomalous behavior, such as, for instance, maybe a city employee suddenly accessing a system from, like, North Korea. That's you know, behavior that would be really kind of strange, and you know, a tool like this could automatically take measures to disable the user account by shutting down, you know, VPN access or switch ports. And augmenting our limited resources by leveraging what's called an MSSP, that's a managed security services provider, to monitor, assess, investigate, and recommend remediation responses 24/7, 365 days a year.
Do they do white hat testing, for example?
I don't think this would include white.
This would be the monitoring and flagging.
Purely, yep.
We actually do penetration testing as well, and that's more where that's usually the scope of those engagements.
Okay.
And the point of the MSSP, you know, this is because, you know, attacks can occur at all hours of the day, and you want some kind of system that can, you know, at least triage and also provide some guidance on remediation. So Tony led a team of system admins with participants from City Hall, RQ, the library, in developing the city's requirements for a SIEM. We started out with 8 vendor solutions and finally selecting LogRhythm as our best choice for the city as a SIEM product. Because we need to augment our staffing to really get the most value out of the aggregated data, we would be taking advantage of services from a LogRhythm recommended MSSP. The company is NDM, and that would be providing 24/7, 365 monitoring, investigation, remediation response alert, and investigations. And really, you know, the cost for that monitoring would be less than the cost for a full-time employee. Lastly, any questions?
Questions.
So again, this item is on the is an RCA, which is on the agenda. In fact, I think we probably included that in the packet for this one. Mm-hmm. But, so we are hoping to move ahead on both that and the Office 365 that within this month, I think is what we're trying to pull together. So.
Yeah. Clearly, it's something we want to be proactive on. It's a reality, and we need to be prepared for it and take steps to mitigate our risk. Questions, comments? Mr. Hickey?
And I don't know who I address this to. So is that so that price, that annual price, is that look based on other places it's been employed, is that fairly stable, or is that something where we're kind of getting the introductory price and it's going to go up steeply?
I think, isn't it a multi-year contract?
I believe it's a 4 or 5 year.
Okay.
And then we've got rates locked in on that, on the monitoring. Not sure on the licensing of the algorithm itself, but how many years that one is for.
Okay.
Mr. Walker?
So, the city council, for myself, speaking for myself, some of these guys, our knowledge is right here, and what you're talking about is right here. So don't look for a lot of technical oversight from me on this particular issue, but big picture, I mean, you said John Deere hadn't, you know, hadn't had a data breach. Well, they haven't found the data breach they've probably already had. And, you know, U.S. electric grid now we're finding it has been probably sufficiently hacked. My question isn't so much about, I mean, we do everything we can to protect the data, but what are, given that this is such a reality, Do we have insurance, or do we have what are the consequences should a data breach occur? Because I imagine it, you know, you can do what you can, but cities are probably the next domino that's going to fall in terms of massive data breaches.
So, yes. I mean, yes, we do actually have insurance through the Minnesota cities. It's an additional rider that we put on. Again, we've never tested it to know just how well that's going to work and how much we'll pay whom for how big of a claim. But there are also municipal liability, municipal tort limits that I assume apply to that as well. But again, our next step, and as part of the Office 365, we intend to start figuring out classifications of data that we intend to encrypt pretty much everything. Ultimately going to happen. So everything at rest is probably going to be encrypted anyway. Again, somebody could find the key someday, I suppose, too. But yeah, we keep moving towards trying to stay a step ahead of them. And yeah, we're basically making the assumption that they're, at this point, with employees just getting caught up in a phishing attack or whatever, that there will probably be something inside of the firewall. And our intent with this is to catch it before it does damage. So
paraphrasing from what you've told us in the past, Terry, In general, as long as the municipality is doing its due diligence towards addressing the issues that are in front of us, the law pretty well protects the city. Does that apply to data breaches as well?
Yes, although there is a state law that has been expanded to include cities a couple sessions ago that require us to take steps of notification. Cases of breach, data breaches. Previously, we were not subject to that law. So there are increasing duties and responsibilities placed on us once we discover it. But the cap on tort liability applies, and the public duty doctrine applies as well. So I believe we're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
You're speaking our language, too, when you talk about the relative cost of this sort of software versus the cost of having an employee to do the monitoring and to try and do that. So I fully support all of the automated machine learning stuff we can do to try and prevent any sort of breaches. I kind of concur. A lot of this is about the inevitable instead of about trying to build a wall that no one will ever break through. So I guess I appreciate bringing it forward. I hope through the consolidation the agreement to kind of get on a single platform, we do realize some savings that helps offset some of these costs. But I think it's good to have these sort of recommendations come through. So appreciate it.
Mr. Ruska.
Dale, if you could help me, I don't have a CIP, Project J1895. This is within the budget that we have set aside, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. And again, we're getting started later than what we maybe envisioned in the beginning, so I think
okay. Well, with that, then I think the IT steering committee has done a good job on this. I'm comfortable with what they're presenting, so I'm fine with supporting them.
All right. Anyone else?
I wouldn't know if I'm not fine with supporting it, so I'm supporting it.
All right. We'll take it up later this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have revisiting the armory RFP proposals. You'll recall that we heard the five proponents at an earlier meeting, and we had essentially one question, which was how wedded were some of the proponents to the surface parking lots to the north? Were those a requirement for their project's viability, or would not having those lots essentially be a deal breaker, if you will? I think the city would very much like to retain ownership of those lots for future opportunities. Not that we wouldn't entertain some sort of a long-term lease, but I think the consensus was we would prefer to hang on to those parcels if at all possible. With that in mind, Aaron, did you want to cue this up? I know you sent out a memo and received some responses that we all had a chance to see.
I think basically what we had been asking was just what you had stated. Pretty much most of the proposals had some sort of acquisition of the adjacent lots. And so the question is,
You sent up, it was attached to
June
email.
16th.
Yep. That came from you.
Friday.
Probably a week ago.
June 16th.
June 16th?
Yep.
I don't have it.
the other piece together.
Did you get any other emails since?
I got one from Gary today, so.
You did?
Yeah.
So it's not that.
Are you saying he's compromised?
No, he was concerned about the password.
What's that? I just sent it to you. Thank you.
Yeah, so it was June 16th at 12:41 p.m.
Can you reset it?
Yeah, I will be forwarded to you.
I just forwarded it.
Oh, all right. So,
maybe.
But we had, basically just had asked, the question of, does your proposal require the use of these lots? And kind of yes or no. And really the response that came in that said that, yes, they still would like to need to purchase those lots was the one follow-up from the Creative Castle is what they're calling it, but with Bucky Beeman and Tassels. And they still just reiterated that, yes, they need to acquire those lots. Their proposal kind of stands as is to make theirs move forward. Then with that, we received a response again from the Entourage Group, which was the kind of fine line, that organization. And they once again stated that they are not requiring, and they did not originally ask for the purchase of lots, that they're okay still with not requiring the purchase of the lots. Although at this point in time, they did ask to possibly have a first right of refusal on that, which is something new, but we can talk about that. So anyways, that one did not. Then the Castle Community, which was the, for the short term, the Scott Haas organization presented two kind of proposed ways that they can either lease the lots from the city for a certain period of time or actually purchase the lots and allow the city to purchase back. And then as far as the Arts Collaborative, we did not get a response from them. And then the last one was the Titan Group response, the Titan KA response, and they did request that they would be willing to use the lots for a one-to-one ratio for their artist lots, but at some point they do want to acquire those lots from the city within roughly the next three years at a price as determined by an appraiser. So really what it comes down to is that it seems like most of them somehow or another still have some interest in definitely using lots, some will want to acquire, but it will kind of just depends on what the council decides how they want to move it with those lots.
All right. So I'll just start the discussion. It answered my question in terms of whether some of the projects proposed were viable, even if they were not allowed to purchase the surface lots. I think it's realistic to think that whatever proposal is selected, they would need some sort of leasing arrangement, which is fine because we know that the properties can't reasonably be developed until 2024 anyway. So that buys us some time. You're right about the right of first refusal and all of that. I think those are some of the details that could be negotiated as you go through the, the nuances of any contractual negotiation. Mr. Campion.
Over the weekend, we received a note suggesting basically to winnow the list down and then maybe enable staff to have some additional meetings. Is that the direction the council would like to pursue here?
Well, that's the idea I was going to throw out there because, just speaking for myself, I had it winnowed to two of the proposals anyway, and then this question didn't do anything to dissuade that. And then, to your point exactly, if you had a couple, we could ask staff to go deeper into some of those negotiations. Admittedly, what was presented to us was a very high-level proposal, and as we all know, there can be a lot of devil in the details. So that was the direction I was headed, to winnow it to two. What do others think, Mr. Woodhead?
I was going to suggest whittling it to three, in part because two of the projects require the acquisition of the lots in some form or fashion. So I would say as we whittle it down and allow staff to work with it, I'm still interested in an opportunity for the public to weigh in on our finalists.
And I think one way we handle that is we can go ahead and set a date, a future date, for the council action, some future meeting date. And between now and that date, the public can weigh in all they want. They can, they, not that they haven't already, but rather than run it through a number of groups in a more formalized fashion, we just put it out there and say, come on, let us know what you think over the next whatever that turns out to be.
I assume we could put a survey and feedback and place for comments so people can do them electronically, get them to us that way.
Yeah. I think realistically, just speaking for myself again, I've received all kinds of comments. I'm not sure I'm going to receive many more that are distinctly different from what I've received already, but they would still have an opportunity between now and a formal vote to weigh in on the two or possibly three that we've chosen as a smaller list, Mr. Newman.
Yeah, the smaller the group, the less work we have to do. So if you're of a mind, just let us know how far down you want to take it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ruskin.
I guess I'd prefer to get it to two. We've had enough time to work on this and to get a lot of our questions answered. I believe that I'm still not completely clear on why we would want to maintain the lots for future development. If we have a decent future development project that can go on them now, I'm trying to understand why that matters. If we have something that we find to be a positive thing in the community, why do we have to hold on to the lots to kill up maybe some ideas that are out there now? So, I knew that we agreed to ask the question, but I didn't know that it was pivotal on the point of that means that we're going to eliminate those groups if they can't.
Mr. Hickey, then Ms. Johnson.
I think the concern for me, I mean, for the initial proposals that came in, the ones that did want to acquire the lot was at a substantial discount. So, I mean, I think maybe, in the interest of, a project that's in the public good, it may not be the full market value, but the proposals we received for those lots were very, very discounted. So if we received a good proposal at a reasonable price, then I think that would change the way I look at it.
Johnson.
That you said it more eloquently than I could have. I felt that some of the proposals were pretty low for what the value of the property was worth. So, my opinion on that.
They should be redeveloped at some point, but we would be giving away millions of dollars potentially in taxpayer value by proceeding with these. Land in the area recently transacted for $324 a square foot. Once we get the questions with this lot issued, we can still do an RFP, but my intent of doing something with the armory was not to subsidize land speculation.
Okay. Mr. Ruskin?
Well, the one proposal here is that the payment of the land would be valued and determined by the appraiser less the cost of the soil.
Yeah, and that's new. I mean, that's new information.
Right, but I'm just saying is that to me is kind of getting, we're kind of going with the market rate then on that one, right? I mean, that's kind of what it says to me.
Campion.
So that was at 3 years, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So, yeah, it's narrowed to two in my mind, mostly two. So I think that there were, So I think if we can winnow it down, I think I'm trying to get the names right. Let me bring up my project here. I think that additional information helped kind of make sure that we weren't missing anything. I was asking the question because it meant something to me. Yep. Like, those lots are more valuable than I think they're being rated at right now, and especially the future value of those lots is probably, for the city in terms of strategic development, also very important. It's a very important spot. So I guess I understand where you're coming from, Councilmember Ruska, but I don't plan on considering either of the projects. I would not recommend either of the projects that are going to require those. Those didn't make my short list.
So, question for Mr. Newman, possibly Mr. Adkins. How do we do this? Can we just, by voice, indicate the two or possibly three that we want to look at and take a tally? Or does it have to be some sort of formalized process?
You can do it by consensus and giving staff direction as to the next step through negotiations.
All right. Because I'm willing to voice the two that I had winnowed it down to, which would be the Entourage Group and the Castle Community Group. And I'm more than happy to explain why, but we can just kind of see what happens.
So
you know, I will tell you that the Entourage Group, as much as I like, you know, the proposal, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I think we have to keep our eyes wide open and be realistic. I mean, we've got a brand new presentation hall being renovated. It's a 1,100 seat venue. We're talking about doing the chateau all in that same area. I mean, there's, despite the marketing analysis that was done, that was very optimistic. I mean, realistically, there's only so much business for those kind of venues. So I think that would make that not a good fit for that location. So that wouldn't be one of the ones I would recommend.
So do you have a couple that?
Yeah, like the Scott Haas project and the Titan project.
Is that the Castle Community?
Castle one? Community.
Okay. Yeah. Those are the two I like.
I have the same two as you, Randy, plus the ACI.
I have plus which one? I'm sorry.
ACI.
Okay.
I have the same two as you.
Ms. Johnson?
I have the same two as you as well. Or in, yes.
Okay. Mr. Ruska?
I'll go with those two. It's not going to matter. Somebody else at this point. So.
Well, and I will concede that the will of the council is not where I met with ACI. So
it'd be nice if we could be together on this and all agree that these are the top two, and I'm willing to do that. So.
I'm willing to go along with that.
It's up to you, Mr. Aiden.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just
no pressure. So,
you know, I assume some point in the future we'll be talking about doing a chateau. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, presentation hall and chateau to me are already a problem, a potential problem. I'm just not sure why we would set this up this way.
And I don't disagree with you necessarily. I just thought that the Entourage proposal was intriguing enough
sure.
that I wanted to take a deeper dive and perhaps some of the numbers and so forth. And then I think that was when they gave us some additional information that explained further the 90-mile rule and so forth. And that was helpful. But anyway, I was compelled enough to want to take a look, Mr. Wood.
I agree with your concern as well. And one of the things that I talked to staff about too is part of the follow-up with them should be some of those questions about, even some potentially, shared management resources with facilities or something. But I'm interested in seeing, how, if the venue sizes end up being three different venue sizes, if some are customized for more classical or performance type music versus this is more of a urban music scene. I don't disagree with your concern.
Yeah.
I just think it's worth looking into further.
Mr. Campton.
So I completely agree, and I think to the point we should expect some sort of memo from maybe the music department to come back and just tell us. I would like some our staff to weigh in on is this a really bad path that we're pursuing here because of future contention for these musical venues, but I amongst the offerings, it was I thought it was deserving of some additional kind of staff negotiation time to sit down and talk about what all would be involved. I mean, you guys, I hope we'll discover bidirectionally if there are roadblocks for either the city or the organization going through this. So that to me is one piece of this. If it's going to completely undermine the efforts we're putting into the Civic Center, then I think we deserve to know that now, and hopefully staff has that expertise to weigh in and give us unbiased guidance on that one.
And again, we'll certainly have some time here for a variety of folks to weigh in with their opinion. I agree. I would very much appreciate staff input as well as additional public input. But then the question for Mr. Reeves, Mr. Newman, would be approximately how much time are you going to need to... We won't hold you to it just yet, but I think we want to keep this moving along at the same time. Mr. Woodard?
And I just throw out that so as to take staff and the Civic Music Board off of the hot seat, I want to specifically request the Civic Music Department and Board give us their thoughts as well.
Okay. Mr. Ruska?
Well, I'd like to thank the five groups that submitted these. I think it gave us some great things to choose from. It allowed us to see some of the ideas put in action from our community. People that are willing to take the time and the effort to look at how they can invest to make these facilities not only active again, but a real great addition for our community. And with that, I've heard a lot of this from a lot of people that we should maybe consider an RFP process for the chateau. Just as an idea of maybe a way to get some additional ideas that would take all the expenditures and operations and everything off the plate of the city if we could come up with some other ideas. So that's just something I'll throw out there for food for thought as we move forward. But I do appreciate all five of these. There's several of them that I think maybe if we dug in a little deeper, we might have seen a higher price tag and a greater benefit. But these are two that are solid, and I'm happy to go ahead and support these.
Mr. Newman.
Probably a couple of weeks. That's an estimate.
Really?
We'll do the best we can. I would say I'm likely, I think our office is likely to say we're not big fans of right of first refusal, so we may look at different approaches. We aren't saying no to it, but you know, if you want to do a development proposal and you got a right of first refusal, how does that work? So we've run into these a little before, so I'm just a little leery about those, and I'll just lay that on the table. We're not saying no, but I just want you to know it's something we're going to look carefully at.
Okay, Mr. Wood.
We've got the two that are still on the table, and my preference would be that we could just tell staff that to not put the right of first refusal. They can compete for it at the appropriate time.
Yeah, I'm not interested in any encumbrances on the other city lot, because I think we have to keep maintain. Part of the reason to narrow it this way is to maintain our freedom with what to do with those lots. So I'm not wholly interested in if that helps negotiations to just have that line in the
I think we're open to listening to them, but I just wanted to get that on the
got
table.
It.
That's something not huge fans of.
Mr. Ruskin.
I think one of the concerns, if I was that group, would be the future parking and not what you're going to have to, you know, to make sure that you have the ability to service your building, and so
we'd look for other ways to assure the parking.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yep.
So, you said roughly 2 weeks, which
I can't say I'll be back for a committee of the whole meeting by that time.
Well, that was going to be my question. Would you bring your information back to a committee of the whole, and we see if there are any still some open questions that have on part of the council? So. Schedule it whenever it's appropriate, one of those first Mondays in July.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Good deal. All right, anything else on that topic for today?
We kind of made decisions.
You know, incredibly it sounds, sometimes we do. All right.
For the closed meeting is really
right.
Now, do we have any other business before we turn it over to the city attorney?
Go ahead.
If I can do a quick, over the weekend I sent a note to Gary, and he distributed it to the entire council about some mowing administrative citations that had been issued. I would, just because it's time sensitive and they basically have 10 days to decide whether or not to dispute it or to go forward, if there's consensus among the group, I would ask for consensus to have the city waive those assessments. What's the appropriate word?
We'll withdraw the citations.
I think you saw a letter of support from staff today. If there's general consensus, I'm just see if
I can support that.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. That's my piece of business.
Two fairly quick items. Want to run a couple of things. I'm going to pull D3 and D4, more just on some clearing up our process for doing things. I want... Anytime we're expending money to outside groups, it's not that I have an issue with these particular expenditures, but there's two things that I want to see us doing as part of this. One is to explicitly require the contracts, simply stating the party, scope of work, amount of funding, dates, the information that's already agreed upon, but to actually have a simple contract that puts that all in writing. And we've actually had issues in the past where we've actually given money to groups when the council action didn't specify the group. It just didn't specify what the purpose of the dollars was. So I'd like to dot our I's and cross our T's. And the second thing I want to do with these ones and ones going forward is specifically put in the contract that the work and projects supported, not the entire organization, but the work that we're supporting for this and all other ones going forward are covered by the Minnesota Data Practices Act.
Talking about E3 and E4?
E3. It's the consent agenda. Yep. Yeah. Sorry.
Whatever the consent agenda.
It's kind of funny they were all off.
Which, by the way, so everyone is aware, we got things out of order. So the council-initiated action will be at the bottom of the agenda where we would normally find it.
Sure.
So we'll, and I think the proponent has been made aware of that, so he doesn't show up early in the meeting. But for purpose of discussion tonight, I'll still use the numbering that's on the agenda.
Yeah.
So I'll refer to it as E1 and so forth.
And I don't need to pull it if folks are okay with these changes, and just that be our practice going forward. Otherwise, we can pull it, and I can try and amend it.
What was the practice is to change to clearly indicate the dollar amounts?
Well, there is no contract. A lot of times we hand out dollars, and it doesn't have to be a complex contract, but there should be some paperwork explicitly stating what
the services agreement. It's a short agreement.
Right. Yeah.
It's a contract.
Yeah.
It's a contract.
Trust me.
By legal standards, it's a contract, and that matters.
Oh, we can add some language in of it.
Yep.
I don't know what the other our partners are. I assume they're okay with it, but we'd have to have like
the big one. They've already verified, and they just told me they'd rather not have it pulled from the consent agenda.
And then the second part of your request?
The second part would be that the work products covered by what we're funding, those work products are covered by the Minnesota Data Practices Act. In other words, public's paying for this stuff. Public has access to the information they're paying for.
He wants it written into all the contracts from this point forward. Anything that's purchased with public funds would be subject to the open records law.
And I would guess that would be something that would have to be run by these organizations tonight to figure out whether or not they would.
It's a new term. It's a new provision in the contract,
yeah.
Yes.
And ultimately, and again, it's not everything the organization does, but it's everything the organization does with regards to the stuff that we're funding. And
just like the study that's to be done.
Exactly. Or in the one case, I think it would just be the project cost for the diversity hiring event kind of stuff. And it's not something that's necessarily ever going to be pursued, but it always preserves the option of transparency for us, the overseers of those dollars.
All right, Mr. Ruskin?
I'm good with this. I think as long as we're consistent moving forward, it clarifies and creates the same kind of template and understanding for all the organizations.
So if we, I'm all logistics right now. If we agree now, are we agreeing to amend the ones tonight? Are we agreeing to make this the practice going forward and have the ones tonight go forward the way they are?
Michael suggests you amend the ones tonight and use it going forward. I would say if you use it tonight, you want to contact those folks and show them.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Is that something that staff can do before the meeting tonight?
I don't think so.
You know, but if there's an issue, they
contact
can
them or
yeah.
contact them. We can try.
I don't need the contract by tonight. As long as there's consensus, the staff has their direction.
We can try and talk to them.
Okay. All right. Everyone okay with that?
Yep.
All right. Next thing I'd like to suggest is I would like to formally, for a couple of reasons, formally move our Committee of the Whole meetings over to Mayo Civic Center as the default location, and employ their video recording technologies over there as part of the meetings. Obviously, there's certain times we're going to have to move it if something else is going on, but it's going to take care of the space issues that we have, and it's easily scalable to add additional seating, and it's probably every bit as accessible as this building is.
Question, is there a cost? I realize it's a city.
Usually there is.
Yeah, there is.
It's our building, and if we're taking from one pocket and putting it in the other, so...
Mr. Hickey,
I
just keep it simple.
I mean, I really don't like this room for a number of reasons, but the biggest thing is that we do get complaints on the accessibility of this room and how crowded it gets, and that we never know when it's going to be crowded. And the other reason is we should be proud of how good that building looks, and I want to show it off not only to visitors, the community, but the ourselves as well, and really use that facility for all we can.
Mr. Ruskin.
I can live with it either way. We've had this place since I've started here, since I moved into this building, for more of a kind of an informal place to sit around the table and discuss issues and not necessarily have a huge presentation for the crowd. And there are times when we have a few, we have some issues with the people that want to be here, but most of the time everybody fits in here other than maybe a couple of times. And I think when we see those coming, we could move those, but again, I'm okay either way.
You know, and I think it's indicative of all the things that are going on in Rochester. These have become more well-attended, mm-hmm. Committee of the Whole. So, and I realize we try to keep it informal, but certainly we want the comfort of the public to be able to listen in. And the recording ability, I certainly agree. What we do today works, but it's, a little bit touch and go sometimes. Mr. Campion.
I support the idea of moving it. I think it's a beautiful facility. I just want consistency. I think we brought that up last time at the 3 p.m. start. As long as it's consistent and I can plan where to be, I would rather not have it moving back and forth. I think that kind of solves that problem. It's going to be as big as we're ever probably going to need. And I guess I'm supportive of moving it. I think there's good reason to do that for some of the people who are having accessibility problems here, as well as the volume of people we're able to fit. So I can get behind that.
So this would more than likely become a budget line item for the future, whatever that turns out to be. But for the remainder of this year, should we pay for any expense out of contingency?
Probably.
How about reciprocal agreement?
I'm thinking we will
reduce the deficit on the one end, and you
let's take it from the 1% that we're giving the Civic Center each month.
All right. It's kind of going out of one pocket to the other, but it does show in their balance.
And I don't need a decision on this today or anything like that. I just wanted to put it out there, and if we can work out some of the differences, that'd be great to create some more support. Last item I had is something for consideration. I'm trying to figure out how to reduce the staff time and council time going into meetings. And one of the things I'd like to suggest is we have a personnel advisory committee. And these are posted public meetings anyway, so the rest of the council can certainly attend these. I would be interested in taking our department updates that we're doing, the routine department updates, moving that to the personnel advisory committee with the understanding that the non-PAC members can show up because it's already a public meeting.
Questions, comments? I'm a little confused only in that the annual departmental updates, because they talk about more than just personnel. They talk about their finances.
Right. Part of the reason why was I'm looking, when I hear how backed up we are on these meetings, I'm trying to figure out what are some of the things that we can find another venue to, or maybe just a separate series of meetings to address these, but I'm trying to figure out how to get some of the more current items to the committee of the whole meetings. Not something that I'm married to, but I just wanted to throw it out there as a suggestion, trying to figure out how to smooth the schedule going forward.
Other questions, comments? Give it some thought.
I would think the department heads, you know, if they're going to give an update, I think they'd like to give it to the whole group. Would be my
Well, I suspect most of the times the whole group will show up.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I stand corrected.
Not necessarily.
You'll show up. You're on the committee anyway.
Right, because I'm on the committee. But
maybe it'll help a little bit, the fact that we're moving these meetings consistently to 3 o'clock. I don't know.
Yeah.
See how it plays out.
Yep.
Well, our city, the music today was, what, 15 minutes? So I don't think that they're that long if we keeping it short. I like the idea of them presenting in front of all of us, and we don't meet regularly with the pack. We meet when we need to, and so I don't know. I guess I...
Good enough for me.
The only other piece of feedback I'd like to get out there is I thought in particular when we get some of the materials ahead of time to be able to see if all the departments can stick to the, let's send out the materials ahead of time, then we can mostly keep this to the 4-slide version of the presentation and questions instead, and that I think will help a lot, especially for bigger groups like Public Works where it can take hours to get through all of it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, let's give that some thought. Anything else before we proceed with the city attorney? All right. The floor is all yours, Mr. City Attorney.
A closed meeting to receive a communication from and to have a discussion with the city attorney regarding the status of and litigation strategy for the pending administrative proceeding before the Minnesota Department of Human Rights involving a current city employee and the city of Rochester, MDHR case 67468. The administrative proceeding is the result of a charge of description.